A fantasy graphic novel by two Arab-American women upends many of the tropes and traditions we associate with the genre. The protagonist of Squire is a girl named Aiza, who dreams of becoming a knight in her country's army. But as a member of the marginalized Ornu community, that dream seems implausible at best. Then she gets the opportunity to compete for a spot in a Squire program, a stepping stone to becoming a knight, only to find out that her dream is not what it seems. It's such a fun read, with swords and castles, set in a kingdom that recalls ancient Turkey or Syria. But there are also deeper themes that I discussed with the book's authors back in April. Sara Alfaji, welcome.
Hi.
And Nadia Shamas, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So, Sara, in the notes in the book, you say you've always had a fondness for scrappy girls with swords. Let's begin with this theme of the representation of women, especially in fantasy, because look, you guys obviously both love fantasy and have throughout your lives, but the fantasy genre has issues. It has issues with representation of women. It has issues with racism. So let's begin with this idea about scrappy girls with swords, Sara.
Yeah, we often talk, me and Nadia, about how as much as we love fantasy, it didn't love us back. And I never really realized what I was missing out on until I got to see it firsthand. I think it's an incredible time right now to be a fantasy reader because we have so many new and emerging voices. So for me, Aiza encompasses everything I love about a protagonist. She is not meant to be the classic main character. There are no chosen ones here. She's the runt of the litter. She has an anger issue, and she's stubborn as all hell. But at the same time, you desperately want to root for her. And I see a lot of my own hopes and hunger and ambitions in Aiza as well. And I don't want to pretend that we're doing something entirely new with Squire. I think we're building off of a beautiful and long tradition of different types of protagonists stepping forward. One of my main inspirations was Hayao Miyazaki's Princess Mononoke. And I often list Mulan as well as one of my inspirations when I was developing this book.
Nadia, how did you handle, number one, the issue of female representation and racial representation in the book? Because part of the storyline is the fact that there is a province, Ornu, where the people were conquered and they are now kind of worse than second-class citizens. There's horrible things are said about them. They are discriminated against. How did you make those choices?
When we were coming up with these characters and the kind of cultural divides, I really wanted them to feel grounded. As a result, for the racial disparities, I didn't have to look much further than what we deal with in our own world today. As Arab Americans, especially I am an Arab American who grew up in New York, which means I was in Brooklyn my whole life, which means I was in Brooklyn when 9/11 happened. And I remember the atmosphere shifting around me overnight. And I wanted to express not only what that feels like when you are suddenly in a world that is hostile to you, but what happens when you inherit that hostility towards yourself. And I feel that that's really kind of the crux of Aiza's journey, is to not only interrogate what it is that she's decided to do and who it is she's decided to believe, but what those beliefs make her believe about herself.
Mm. So, Sara, then let's talk about the way you represented all of this that Nadia just talked about.
I did a lot of research for Syrian clothing, Ottoman clothing. I dug through visual archives at the New York Public Library. I went to Turkey and visited like the various museums and castles in Istanbul in order to see like what it like to live there in that moment of time. Coming up with characters like Sahar, coming up with characters like General Hind, like Aiza, like her mother, it meant looking at who I grew up around as well. Every face that you see in Squire is the face of one of my friends or one of my teachers or a relative of mine.
There is commentary about war and about why nations go to war, and also who are the soldiers that fuel those kind of conflicts. Nadia, my instinct is to say this is particularly relevant right now, but it's probably always relevant. What were you trying to communicate through your view of war and conflict and I guess, unjust invasion, an unjust conflict?
It's funny because I had mentioned that I was in Brooklyn, and you know, I grew up in a neighborhood that had a large Arab population, but also had a population of people who did not necessarily like us very much. But one thing that was always there was the military recruiting. Even my own mom was reached out to during the Iraq War to possibly be a translator. And it was an enormous sum of money they were offering for us at the time. And then I started getting used to seeing, you know, my classmates or my friends who didn't have a lot of money, who didn't really want to go to college, who just kind of didn't have anywhere to go, just deciding to go to the military, or friends of mine who decided to go to the military so that they could pay for college. And so the way that the military presented itself and recruited people, and specifically people who are down and out or from marginalized groups without a lot of income or support, was an important part of Squire. Also, Squire, the reason that they're so young is because I also wanted to touch on the way that pro-Iraq war propaganda made its way into children's media. Like, I remember seeing online people posting like Disney Channel pro-war stuff. It's in retrospect that I'm able to see how insidious and how constant the messaging was. And all of this is just part of the way we teach history, the way we teach nationalism, the way that we teach our own American identities. And if you are not fitting cleanly into that identity, what you're going to do is either you're going to feel completely outcast, or you're going to try to shift yourself to fit that identity more cleanly. But what you cut away when you try to do that is your heritage.
I want to be clear, you guys are talking about some really deep and important issues, but at heart, this is just a rollicking good story. Like, it's just a good story.
We like to have our fun.
It's just all this other stuff wrapped into it. There's plenty of humor in here. But to get back to the serious stuff, I've mentioned that ISIS people are the Ornu. They are discriminated against. They are, obviously, there's a lot of prejudice against them. I was really intrigued by the fact that the tattoo, which literally marks her people, with which Ornu give to even young children, Isa's parents ask her to cover it up.
Yeah.
And that to me felt so heartbreaking, that not only did they want her to essentially pass, but they were probably right that she would go ahead.
Yeah, it's a conversation I think every Arab American kid has had with their parents. It's interesting to hear conversations right now, especially as, you know, we are in an age of racial reckoning and discussions about race and identity. And oftentimes you hear the discussion of like, when is the time? When is the time to talk to kids about race? We didn't have that luxury. I had very frank conversations with my parents about how I pronounce my name. I pronounce my name at the start of this conversation as Sarah Al-Faji because that's easier for people to say. I could have made a choice to call myself Sara Al-Faqi and waited for you guys to figure out how to pronounce it. Those are all choices I have to make on a day-to-day basis. I can choose to take my hijab off or keep it on if I wanted to have an easier day. These are things that parents are very conscious of. I think every parent at their core is always going to be afraid for their child and want the best for them. And it comes at a sacrifice.
Something that I was always told growing up by my own parents was, you know, especially my dad would always say, if someone asks you, you know, just say you're American. And I think even now it's funny because he, with Squire and kind of seeing me called an Arab American, you know, both my parents are immigrants. So he doesn't quite understand why I want to claim that title for myself so much. But I think that that's just something about the, you know, the hyphenated experience. I always like to say that I'm Arab American and everything that I am and everything that I feel is in the hyphen. It's in between. But for him and for both my parents, they just wanted me to, you know, they just wanted assimilation as protection.
And I'm on the other end of the spectrum where the conversation I had with my parents is, you are Arab American first, and you don't let anyone take it away from you. And this is the price you pay in order to keep that identity intact. And it's worth that price, you know? So these variations of conversations are just happening within every family. And that was a very real experience. Yeah, that opening scene in chapter one where Aiza comes to terms with the decision she wants to make to join the army, that honestly could have been taken verbatim from some Arab American families.
So last question for you, which is, you leave it kind of ambiguous at the end whether there's another squire coming. Is there another chapter in Aiza's story?
Listen, comics are hard. I won't say yes and I won't say no, but probably not anytime soon.
Yeah. That is Sara Alfaji and Nadia Shamas. They are the co-authors of Squire. Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.